This is On The Record, and we are the two mics. Welcome. First of all, let me introduce you to the star of the show, Mr. Mike Porky Parry.
Well, co-star, I would say. Co-star.
That's very generous of you. The reason you're the star of this particular show, though, is because this is Ask Porky.
I know, but somebody's got to ask. You see what I mean?
That's true.
I mean, it should be Answer Porky, that's true. Shouldn't it, really?
Well, no, because the questions are asked by the audience.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And they've been
through yourself, of course.
In there, by their thousands. Yeah. Well, they have tweeted us.
Yes.
They have sent us messages on Facebook.
And you're the conduit.
I'm not necessarily the conduit, but I certainly will be asking the questions.
Yeah, good. Good.
If that's all right with you.
And I will give the answers.
And you will give the answers. Now, we can kick off straight away with a question from Alex, who is asking this. Porky, I am double booked and have to lie to get out of going to a wedding, but I'm not a very good liar. Mm. Can you give me some tips about how I should construct the perfect lie, and please give an example of the best one you've ever come up with?
Well, it depends what you're double booked in. Mm. I mean, if this is your mate's wedding, you should go to your mate's wedding. Yeah. If it's a family wedding, you should go to a family wedding.
But it might
if
be you're saying your sort of spouse's friend's wedding or something.
It might be your girlfriend trying to get to a wedding or something like that. Now, it depends what the alternative is. If the alternative is a Premier League football match for the team that you follow,
yes,
I can understand the problem. However, the only way to make sure it all works out in the end is to be completely honest about it.
Yes.
You don't go around telling people, I can't come because my mother's had a heart attack and I've got to go look after her for the weekend.
I'm never keen to wish any ill on any member of the family. Nope. You don't want to use that as an excuse.
Exactly.
In case the karma gets you.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. So my view is this. I think you've sent me a question about how do I become a deceitful little rat, okay?
Yes.
And I'm going to say I don't like deceitful little rats.
Right.
I don't think you should be a deceitful little rat.
Yeah.
I think you should be honest and brave, because you're showing cowardly tendencies here for not telling people the truth.
Yeah, why but he's not saying he can't go to two things at the same time?
Well, he can't go to two things at the same time. You either explain to the one that you're turning down why you can't go, or you be absolutely frank and forthright up front. You go up to the person and say, look, I can't stand the effing sight of you, so I'm not coming to your wedding.
That's
all right.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Question number two from Graham. Are Liverpool any better under Jurgen Klopp than they were under Brendan Rodgers? After all, Brendan Rodgers had them finishing second.
Yeah, he did, and he almost won the league with them. Mm. And if it hadn't been for the slip, Steven Gerrard's slip against Chelsea, they may well have won the league.
Yes.
And they went away then and squandered a 3-goal lead at Crystal Palace. So 5 points down the drain that would have given them the Premier League title that year.
Mm.
However, what you have to balance it against is the strength of the other teams in the Premier League.
Yes.
And there is absolutely no doubt about it that Manchester City are going to be the main bulwark to, to Liverpool's ambitions this season.
We shall see.
Are amazingly stronger than any team that Liverpool were playing against in that particular season.
Yeah.
And also, all this sort of bollocks about, you know, Liverpool. I mean, you know, at this time of the year, all the newspapers publish their star writers' predictions.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who's going to win this? You know, I've seen about two.
How many of them have ever come right?
Well, that's always great to go to the end of the season and say, look, you know, what do you lot know? What do you lot know? Look at all this load of bollocks. You said they were going to win the league, and they never did. I've seen one or two football writers out of maybe 40
who've
plumped for Liverpool instead of Manchester City.
Yes.
I think one of them was Darren Lewis, our old pal from the Mirror. I think he thinks that Liverpool could do it.
Mm.
But quite frankly, at the end of the season, Liverpool did extremely well on day one this season, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Beat West Ham 4-0. West Ham were very, very poor.
They weren't good.
Manchester City went to Arsenal and decimated Arsenal, whose goalkeeper, by the way, Petr Cech, is now a figure of fun in Germany.
Why?
Across Germany. Because what happened was Arsenal bought this new German goalkeeper for about 19 million quid from Cologne, I think it was, or some German club.
Right.
So this guy expects to go and walk into the Arsenal team and establish himself.
Mm.
On day one, old Unai Emery, you know what I mean?
Unai
has decided he's going, he's going to emulate Pep Guardiola.
E-I-E-I-O.
That's the way Liverpool fans used to sing it.
Right.
And play out from the back.
Mm.
Well, did you see his performance? He very nearly scored two own goals by shuffling the ball around the penalty area.
He had the closest shot, I think, in the previous 15 minutes at his own goal.
He did, and it missed by an inch.
Like it
missed by an inch.
What was he thinking?
It was incredible. And so the German club, and I think it's Cologne, it might not be, it might be another club, then sent out a real piss-take video saying that, you know, this is how you play out from the back, showing the goalkeeper that they've bought, literally dribbling the ball halfway up the field and making this great pass. pass to a forward, you then scored.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll give him a go and get rid of old Peter Cech, who might have filled his boots and finally reached the end of his rope.
Yeah.
Mike says this, I'm not sure what this means. I'm an EOD engineer. If Porky had joined the military, what would he have chosen to be?
Hang on,
I'm not
what?
Sure what an EOD engineer
EOD,
is.
EOD, engineer of distinction?
Well, I assume it's some kind of military term.
EOD engineer, explosive devices.
Is it something to do with...
It's explosive devices.
Oh, right. Or like danger UXB and
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that means that guy is a bomb disposal squad officer, without a shadow of a doubt. That's the last job I'd ever do.
Yeah, on his Twitter it says EOD and UXO engineer.
Yeah, well, UXO is an exploded operation, isn't it?
There's a picture there. Yeah. Look, he looks a bit of a macho man.
A bit of a macho man, yeah, okay. Well, the last job I'd ever take in the military is as a bomb disposal expert.
Why?
They're very, very brave men,
yeah.
But if I want to get my bollocks blown off, I'd rather do it in a different way to, what do they call them? What's it called? EIS, isn't it?
Well, there's IEDs, there's,
what's that?
That's IEDs, those are the things that are...
temporary things.
Sort of the side of the road.
Yeah, improvised explosive device. Yeah. That's an IED.
That's an IED, that's right, that's what I said.
So I don't want those. Now, there was a terrible story years ago of... remember the guy who whose wife was a very glamorous blonde widow? And remember in those days, everybody used to come back through this little village in Gloucestershire?
Yes.
And she stood by the hearse. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And his name was Smith.
Uh-huh.
And she called him Smithy.
Right.
And this guy literally, I think he defused about 50 bombs in a week and then just got too tired, made a mistake and got blown up.
Yeah.
So it's a terribly difficult job. Terribly brave men who do
it. Well, I'm a mate of mine, and you may have known him as well, from the Sunday Mirror, got blown up in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
And his photographer, who was with him, he was there for the Sunday Mirror.
Yes.
He got his legs blown off.
Oh, really? Who was that?
His name was, I think it was Rupert Hamer.
Ooh, blimey, that's awful.
Who was the reporter.
Yeah.
And the photographer, name slips my mind.
And he stood on an IED, did he?
No, they were in a car, and it blew up underneath the car.
Bad news.
Horrible.
Absolutely horrible news. So the answer is, I wouldn't join the military anyway.
So you would have been, as my dad would call it, when you were, if you were in the RAF, he'd call you a penguin.
A penguin,
why? A penguin was a bird that didn't fly.
Oh, I see.
So it was somebody who worked
I wouldn't. No,
it'd be somebody in an office in the RAF.
No,
too frightened to go on a plane.
No, definitely not me. I just didn't want to be an unexploded bomb device guy, because I to do that, you have to understand a bit about physics at school. Physics was my worst subject. I'd have got the wires in the wrong place all the time.
Yeah.
And I'd have blown myself up on the first mission without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay.
Not much use to the army.
No,
as I've said before, and as I say again, the only real job for a guy like me is fighter pilot, right? And I would be a fighter pilot.
You'd never get in
I would have been the RAF equivalent of the Red Baron.
Really?
Yeah, I'd have been the Blue Baron.
The Blue Baron.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Joe says this. I'm looking at. We'll have to move along here because we've got lots of questions and we're running out of time.
Right.
Looking at purchasing a new house, do you think I should buy now or wait till March for Brexit to cause chaos to the housing market and get a bargain?
I don't think Brexit will cause chaos to the housing market. The housing market, in my view, depends solely on the pressures of supply and demand. There aren't enough properties in this country. There is a big debate about whether we should build on the Green Belt, and I say, of course we should, because the Green Belt is only visited by people very rarely. Well, the Brown Belt should be used more, but the problem is, building in cities on brown sites, i.e., you know, knocking down old houses, is so expensive, whereas you can go and buy a field for nothing and just build 250 houses.
But why
should
it be so expensive to buy on the Brown Belt?
Well, because it's in a city property. I mean, you've seen it. I was at the BBC the other day, right? And you have to go up from Oxford Circus Tube Station past their new building.
Broadcasting
you know.
House.
Yeah, Broadcasting House, that's right. And that, what's the name of that? Langham Place, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then the other side of Langham Place, there's a pub I used to use every time I'd finish working there. And I go to look at it, and it's got wooden boards all over the windows
Shut
and
down.
The doors locked and chained.
Yeah.
It's been sold for property development.
Of course.
So they're going to have £1 million flats in that block. It's it's in a, you know, the West End of London.
Mm.
And that's what will happen to brown site developments. Yeah. You can build them there. But no poor, you know, chap who's come to this country from another country can afford to live there.
But look at Docklands. I mean, Docklands was pretty much destitute and empty.
Yeah, it was.
It was full of warehouses and all that. And that's all now been turned into luxury flats.
Yes, it has.
Now, if you go further out, I'm not talking about like Oxford Street, but further out.
Or somewhere like that.
Yeah, Deptford, down towards, you know, even down towards Croydon, down
that
way.
That's right,
you'll find old factories that they could easily turn into flats, surely.
Yeah, you will. I agree. But nobody has got the resources to invest in those for short-term profit.
Mm.
You know, it's all about building housing estates.
Yeah.
You ask somebody like Steve Morgan, who used to own Manchester...
The Redrow man.
Redrow man, used to own Wolverhampton Wanderers, always wanted to own Liverpool Football Club, his own club. He'll tell you that you can turn your money over 100% in 12 months building houses. Right. That's what people want to do.
Okay. Evertonian King asked this question. Yeah. What is the greatest compliment and most egregious diss you have received from significant celebrities?
I don't get a lot of compliments from celebrities.
You don't get a lot of compliments generally, do
you? No,
really?
I don't really. But a lot of people say, both on social media when you meet them, that you and I and our act as the two mics is brilliant.
Yes.
And that they have never heard anything like
that
it.
Yes, that is true.
And we are incredibly popular. Two Mics TV, which has been taken up by thousands of people, delighted to say, have now discovered that we're there.
There's a lot of good stuff on there, actually.
There's a lot of very good stuff on there. When
the Fleet
came
Street
out
Tales.
Today, yeah, well, today,
Fleet Street Tales.
Yeah, and that's right. And then some days of the week we put out Full Disclosure
full
and all
disclosure.
That kind of stuff, you know. So I've had all those, but I mean, I've never really been knocked back. A lot of people don't like my style.
Yeah.
They think I'm too garrulous.
Yeah.
That means speaks too much.
Uh-huh.
I think I've got verbal diarrhea.
Yeah.
That means it speaks too much, you know what I mean?
Right.
But
some of them think you're a bit cruel and nasty and horrible.
No, I'm not cruel, nasty, horrible. I'm actually compassionate and quite good. But I would say that getting a phone call from Rod Stewart's PA to say, would you and MG like to join Rod on his plane up to Glasgow this weekend? He's a big fan of yours.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty good compliment.
It is a pretty good compliment. Yeah. And also when he was recounting back to us some of the stuff that we'd previously said on the air.
Exactly.
That he'd been listening to. That was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Kane says this, if Porky had a choice to keep only one thing, would it be his wealth or his knowledge?
Well, knowledge doesn't buy you beer. Knowledge doesn't buy you a hammock in the garden where you keep your orchard.
Yeah, if you've got a garden.
Yeah, if you've got a garden, that's right. So, without doubt, wealth. Wealth has always been a source of...
So you'd be happy to be wealthy and ignorant, in other words?
Yeah, I'd be very happy to be wealthy and thick, OK? Because, as far as I'm concerned...
Well, there you go, then.
Money can cure everything.
Mm.
If you're... terminally ill, people say, well, money can't cure that. No, it can't, but it's better to be terminally ill with a lot of money so that you can spend the last part of your life literally getting bladderated every day.
Or flying off to nice places.
Flying off to nice places, getting a few young ladies to perhaps join you on a bit of a spin around in a motorboat.
Some terminal illness.
Yeah, but I mean, you might be able to cope a little bit, you know, towards the end and all that kind of stuff. They'd have to do a lot more of the work, obviously, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But no, give me wealth any time over knowledge. Knowledge is it's overblown. I mean, if you've got a load of knowledge, I mean, I'll be telling you sometime soon about, you know, all these lazy bastard students in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And they're taught by lazy bastard lecturers who think that because they've got lots of knowledge, you know, they're good people.
Yeah.
They're not. They're bums.
Yeah, well, knowledge doesn't buy you everything, does it?
Yeah.
Matt says, what would Porky prefer, a night out on the bladderation trail or a night in with a bottle of Benlin?
Benlin?
Well,
would you drink Benlin for?
Benlin has interesting effects. It has lots of interesting
effects. Benlin, is it like a sort of illegal high?
Cough syrup.
Cough syrup.
Well, if you drink too much of it, you become delirious.
What do I want to drink Benlin for?
Well, I don't know. I used to
drink a lot of it. The answer is a night out in the bladderation. But these days, because I regard myself as a select person, I will only go out and bladderate with those whose company I choose, not the other way around.
Uh-huh.
Because I've reached a stage of life now where I feel comfortable in my own skin, with my own friends, my own people, and I'm never, ever again going to agree to join a group of people, you know, just to keep them happy, but it won't keep me happy. So, for instance, you get invited to, like, Christmas do's and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
I would not dream of going to an office Christmas do. I do not want to be sat at a table with 12 other people in the corner of a restaurant where you can't even get out to go for a leak without, you know, moving chairs and tables around, where you've got to wait for 12 meals to come, OK?
Yeah.
And then when they come, who's this for? Oh, you've got the wrong one. Oh, I didn't order this, right? And then you've all got to raise a glass and say, well, happy Christmas, and start eating.
Yeah.
And then you've got to put up with these insufferable bores for the rest of the afternoon.
Yes.
Not for me.
Okay.
I'd happily have a... an office lunch party for one without any problem.
There you go. Spencer gives you another quandary choice. If you could either meet John Lennon and spend a day with him or watch Everton win the Premier League, which one would it be, Porky, and why?
On the basis that I've seen Everton win the Premier League three times in my lifetime. Well, actually, they won the first one in 63, but I was too young to actually appreciate it.
Right.
But I was there the night we won it in 1970.
Mm.
I was there the night we won it in 85, and I was in Norwich in 87 when we won it again. So having seen that three times, and the prospect of meeting John Lennon, who's probably the greatest hero of my life...
Which you've never met.
Never met, and I never will, of course, now, because he's dead.
Yeah.
I have to say that if you could, you know, get into a time machine, the TARDIS, go back in time...
Yeah.
I would definitely sacrifice one of those three nights watching Everton win the Premier League. Not that I would want to rub Everton's victory off, it's just that I wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
To spend a day with John Lennon would be amazing.
Charlie says, if you had one day to live on this earth, what would you do?
Well, it would depend on the circumstances on which I was leaving this earth. So, for instance, when I was a kid and we were brought up, you know, in Northern England, everybody talked about the four-minute warning.
Yeah.
There was a place called Flying Dale or Filey Dale in Yorkshire, which was an early warning system for nuclear attack from Russia. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Did you get that video where they taught you to hide under the desk?
Yeah, all of this kind of stuff. And your parents used to drum it into you. I mean, you know, remember, both my parents lived through the Second World War.
Yeah.
So they knew the sound of bombs dropping from the skies.
From the skies,
and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And
that's why you wonder now what we would do if that ever happened. Because, I mean, I can't imagine what that's like.
Well, I have no idea. The thing is, there wouldn't be a four-minute warning anymore.
No.
Because what happens before war breaks out is international tension rises.
Yeah.
So you get a lot more warning than the four-minute warning. But in the days of the Cold War, you didn't see international tension rise if Russia suddenly decided we're going to invade Europe.
Yeah.
They would just launch the missiles and they would come and you'd get a four-minute warning.
Yeah.
And that was it. So if you said, I've got one day left because I've suddenly been diagnosed with, what's it called, the blood disease, you know.
No, I don't know, leukaemia,
that's right. Yeah, one day left. Yeah. I would... I'd gather the people that I most care about, and you know, I'd number you amongst those.
Thank
okay,
you. Very
in terms of who I'd want to spend my last 24 hours with, and have a great bladderation party until I couldn't even remember, and I'd pass out and I'd be dead.
Yeah,
it'd be great.
That would be the way to go. So here we are, part two of Ask Porky.
Okay,
we've got through quite a few subjects. Got a lot more to get through.
Yeah.
Here's one from Lee, who says, "What advice would you offer to Twitter users who ignore the Blado in Modo rule and then rant and rave about their football team's fortunes?"
Well, it depends how you rant about them, you know. Sometimes you can do it constructively, sometimes you can do it blockheadedly, and sometimes you can do it pathetically, all right? Now, funny enough, the first game of this football season was Everton at Wolverhampton Wanderers.
So it was.
Our boy Richarlison scored twice. It was brilliant day. Day was ruined by a ridiculous sending off by the referee against Phil Jagielka.
His foot was pretty high.
And subsequently, the free kick that Wolves won from that got them an equalising goal, and we came back 2-1, and it was 2-2. So... I did a bit of ranting on Twitter, but it was all balanced, it was moderate, it was based on fact, and that is the way to do it. Because once you start...
I didn't get the sense that Adrian was having a go at you here.
No, no, but once you become a ranter, people stop listening to you.
Yes.
So what you have to do is you have to apply the same rules...
Sorry, that was Lee, not Adrian.
Yeah, that's right. You would apply to your own team, your own decisions, to every other team, okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Paul says this, Porky, have you ever been no good at anything?
I was not very good at some things in my life. But the minute I found out I wasn't very good at them, I stopped doing them, OK? So, for instance, I once took a job as a feature editor, OK?
Oh, yeah.
But I hated it because it's not instant news. I like getting into the news that's breaking on that day. And in newspapers, that used to be very exciting. It's not exciting now because radio is much more exciting because radio breaks instantly.
Yeah.
You know, we found out the other day that Ben Stokes, the cricketer, was cleared by a jury
he
after a couple
was.
Of hours.
Yeah.
Instant news.
He didn't have to wait for the papers to come out the next day.
Exactly, you know, and then the papers wouldn't reveal that on your doormat until at least 18 hours the next day, you know what I mean? Feature writers are... Basically, I think there's some good feature writers who write good features because of their writing style.
Yeah.
But mostly speaking, you've got to feed them with ideas all the time. They don't seem to have much of a...
They're a bit loose, aren't they?
A bit loose, don't have an ideas bank much themselves. And quite frankly, a lot of features I read these days are not worth reading. I mean, they're just not because the information's out there elsewhere.
Mm.
So I wasn't very good at that and I stopped doing it. I got a more powerful role on the institution I was working at and just built back up again. I was also not very good at investing in a dreadful business called Sports Night Live.
Yes.
It was run
by... Well, it's not we weren't very good at it.
Yeah.
It just didn't work very well.
Well, it was run so badly. It was run by a complete clown, right, who had ambitions to be a media mogul.
Oh, yes.
Modelled himself
There's
on...
There's a lot of that about there.
Oh, there is, yeah. Modelled himself on Rupert Murdoch, you know, brought his family in, you know, as his dynasty of this great... And it completely collapsed because he was just fucking useless at running it. He didn't have a clue. Uh-huh. He'd only ever run businesses before with other people's money, mostly Rupert Murdoch's.
Well, maybe you should remember not to invest in things that you're not very happy about.
Exactly.
John says, some say New York lost a lot of its character after Giuliani cleaned it up in the 90s. Mm. Where do you stand, Porky?
Well, you seem to have a more strident view about this than I do. Yeah. But I mean, you lived in New York a lot longer than I did. We went back, didn't we, last November. And I have to say, I got a tremendous buzz when we were going into the city.
It was
only
last year.
It was only last year.
I suppose it was only last year. It was September, I think it was.
September last year. And I get a tremendous buzz about the place. I don't mind the fact it's been cleaned up a bit. I think it looks good now. And, you know, Times Square is buzzing and people there making a living by walking around naked in Times Square and all those kind of strange things that America still has. Yes. But mostly speaking, it's the attitude of the American people, which I like, and their way of life, and their can-do and get-on-with-it type attitude, which permeates every level of American society. In fact, I can't understand, honestly, how there are Democrats in America who just want to do things like loony left people do, what I mean? Right. I don't understand how that fits into American
society.
Well,
there's not too many of them, really.
Well, there's a lot of them on the East Coast, isn't there? A lot of them in New York and Washington.
There's what you call champagne socialists, but they're not really socialists. I mean, anyone in America who calls himself left-wing is probably still right.
That old Bernie, what's his name, a guy who was
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, competing with
he's an independent,
Mrs.
though.
Clinton.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but nevertheless, you know, I don't know how American society can breed people like that because there is no such
but
thing.
But he's from Vermont, though, which is a bit of a weird place.
That's true. There's no such thing as meritocracy in American society. Yes. The idea in American society and why it's the richest and most successful country in history is that if you stand on your own two feet, if you get on with it, you will have the opportunity to succeed in this country.
You will.
So get on with it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
1970 LUFC says, given your wealth of knowledge from reading a diverse selection of journals, how do you eradicate Creeping Charlie from the lawn? I'm not sure what Creeping Charlie is. I assume it's some kind of ivy or something, is it?
Creeping Charlie sounds to me like a sort of a moss or a weed or something like that. I can't tell you how to eradicate that, but I can tell you of the fears that homeowners have when the word Japanese knotweed
Japanese
is mentioned.
Knotweed,
is mentioned.
That's
and,
three words, isn't it?
All right, the Japanese phrase then, the knotweed. Phrase, Japanese knotweed, No, knotweed's one word. Knotweed is one
is
word.
It?
Yes, it is,
All right, so two
K-N-O-T.
Words, Japanese knotweed is two weed.
Yeah, Japanese knotweed. Knotweed. Now, I saw some poor woman. I was looking through my property journals, you know, and I came across a reference to a video which I looked at. This poor woman had built a lovely little sort of semi-detached house, you know, in a village somewhere in Northamptonshire.
Yeah.
Train ran along the bottom of the garden, which is no problem. I've got properties where trains run along the bottom of the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
And I find it lovely to hear the trains whooshing past.
As long as
it's
not like every 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's not every 2 minutes. You know, it's on a commuter belt from Stockbroker into London, you know. And then all of a sudden, this rather, you know, green-looking type could you call it foliage, I suppose, started appearing over her fence. Mm. Because what they do is, developers, is they get the border lined out by knocking in a few wooden poles and put wooden panels there to indicate the end of your garden, you know.
Right.
And anyway, she had a look at it and then she thought, I wonder what this is. And then she got somebody round, found out it was Japanese knotweed. Mm. Within weeks, that Japanese knotweed was lifting the paving slabs on her patio.
Blimey.
Because that's how strong and powerful it is. And it had grown 2 or 3 feet over the fence at the bottom.
Right.
You cannot kill Japanese knotweed.
Can't you even set fire to it or burn it?
No, you can't. It'll just come back.
Right.
And it's the equivalent of Rasputin.
Oh, yeah.
You know Rasputin was the lover
as
of the Russian queen.
Rasputin.
Rasputin, lover of the Russian queen.
Yes.
You know, to get rid of him.
Yeah, that was a song by Boney M.
Yes,
as opposed
to
a particularly historical fact.
Well, yeah, but it was based on a historical fact. Rasputin was the mad monk, okay? Yeah. He had horrible fingernails all, you know, crusted in oil and filth and all that.
What?
Yeah. Well, because he was a slob. He used to eat food with his fingers and all this kind of stuff.
I think
you know?
They all did then, didn't they?
Well, he didn't have cutlery. He did in particular.
Right.
But what happened was, he arrived at the Royal Palace in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
One of the royal children was very ill. So he made up this story that he was a mythical, mystical man of medical powers.
A healer.
Yeah. And he went into the bedroom, saw the kid, and twisted his leg a bit and all this kind of stuff, you know, and gave him, you know, pulled out a bottle of, you know, secret medicine from his pocket of his flea-bitten coat.
Right.
Poured it down the kid's throat, and the kid survived.
Really?
The kid had something like scarlet fever.
So they thought he was a healer.
Absolutely, they thought he was a healer. So, but then, of course, the Tsar...
He spent most of his time shagging, didn't
he? He did, yeah, yeah. Then, of course, the Tsar thought, oh, he's a holy man.
Yeah.
I can leave him in the palace with the queen without a problem.
Yeah.
Rasputin then started, you know, frombying the queen, you know, in many different sort of ways, you know what I mean?
Wasn't she put off by his hideous kind of hygiene?
Not really. No, it didn't seem to worry her, you know. And she, apparently, she liked it, you know, back, front and centre. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff.
How do you know that?
Well, I've read a book about it. One of my journals.
Rogerization, Secrets of the Russian Tsars.
Secrets of the Russian Tsars. And of course, you know, this had to come to an end.
Yeah.
So the Tsar ordered his death, you know. Mm. But to kill him, they tried to drown him.
Right.
But he climbed out of the river Moscow, where they tried to...
Well, they could have drowned him very well if he climbed out.
No, he climbed out.
Yeah.
So then they decided to poison him. Mm. So on another occasion, they put poison in his food, He ate all the poison, he didn't die.
Right.
So then they thought, this really is a...
So he really has got some special powers
and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So then they shot him,
right?
You know, they got him down a blind alley somewhere in St. Petersburg, back to St. Petersburg, shot him, but he just kept walking.
Yeah.
So then two of them leapt on him with knives and stabbed him like 60 times.
So what, did he have nine lives or something, Rasputin?
Well, I don't know, but he got up and walked away from that as well.
Really?
And then he only got 100 yards, he collapsed and he died.
Are you sure this wasn't some kind of myth?
No, to make him out to be more important than he actually was. No, it's absolutely true, believe me. Absolutely true.
How about this? Next question from Don. Porky, do you remember the smallpox outbreak in Birmingham in the late 1970s? And if so, did you fear for your life?
No, I don't. Smallpox outbreak in Birmingham?
In Birmingham, yeah.
Well,
I worked
in Birmingham from about 77 to about 80.
Okay.
I don't remember a smallpox outbreak. I thought smallpox had been eradicated from this country altogether.
I thought it had been as well.
But it could have been one of these things where, you know, sometimes it comes out of a test file in a hospital or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Research scientific locations.
Yeah,
and all
what about
country.
That explosion down at Porton Down? That was a bit worrying, wasn't it?
What was that?
Well, there was an explosion a week or so ago down at Porton Down.
Porton Down?
Yeah, somebody died.
Oh, did they?
But they said, oh, don't worry. Yeah. It's nothing to do with the Novichok.
Yeah, okay.
It's nothing to do with the secret testing that we're doing in the chemical warfare department of the Ministry of Defence.
Absolutely.
Just don't worry about it. So nobody's written about it.
She was a bit lucky, that lady who died of the Novichok, wasn't she? Because her boyfriend, who was a homeless bum,
found a bottle. Both homeless.
Found a bottle of perfume.
So he says.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and took it home to her and said, "Here, darling, have the perfume." It turned out to be the most lethal nerve gas on earth.
Yeah,
it's no wonder she didn't last.
You know
long.
What was even better than that?
What was that?
He came on TV.
Yeah.
And said, "You know, the problem is, I feel really guilty." About the fact that she died.
Yes.
And I went, well, that should be the fact, mate, because you did fucking kill her.
That's right,
You're the one that gave her the poison perfume.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
So you should feel guilty.
Well, yes, except that who is really guilty? Is it the homeless bum who picked up the perfume bottle, or is it the Russians, who we are almost certain? In fact, we're so certain
that
the Russians...
Well, we've got two guys, apparently, that we know did it, right?
Yeah, that's right, that's right. They haven't been named in this country, but we know who they are. But, listen, it's got to be a pretty cut-and-dried case, because... the press, the President Trump, has actually said we're taking sanctions against Russia because of the way they try to poison these people in England.
Yeah.
So it's got to be pretty on the record.
So it
you
must
know?
Be true, though.
Yeah.
Brian says, hi, Mike. My question is, have you ever sworn on accident on live radio? I do enjoy the industrial language used in the podcasts.
I did once, actually, when we were still...
I was there. I remember.
Were you?
Yeah.
Where?
You did it once on the Two Mike Show overnight.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I see, overnight. Okay, well, I did it worse than that once.
Dumped, though.
It got.
We have for those of you who don't know what a dump button is.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got a dump button in the studio.
Yeah.
So that if something is said which is untoward, sometimes by callers.
Yes.
Or sometimes by guests.
Yes.
Or sometimes by the presenters.
Mm.
There's a little button you can hit.
That's right.
And it doesn't go out on air.
That's right. Absolutely. We've got to get the timing right of that as well. But in the early days, when we were still on Oxford Street and was talk radio, I was doing a show with Alan Brazil.
Yeah.
One of the first shows I've done. It was an evening show.
Oh, yeah.
7 o'clock. And the debate was about Matthew Le Tissier having never left Southampton.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he had offers to go to London clubs and all that, but wanted to be a big fish in a small pond, fine, no problem at all. And some guy rang up and said, you know, hey, Mush, what's wrong with Southampton? You know, I love Southampton. I said, nothing wrong with Southampton. He says, I've lived here all my life. And I'm going to live here for the rest of my life. And I said, well, you're just a sad bastard.
Right.
And everybody panicked, you know, behind the glass. And
right.
And that got dumped. But in those days, apparently dumping was very serious, and a light went off in all the other studios. Dump.
Well, there was a time when every time the dump button was used, a particular program director, who shall remain nameless, used to get an email.
Yes, that's right.
As soon as the dump was happening, he would get an email saying this time it's been dumped.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So the answer to that is but not very often. And I have to say, we now broadcast on so many different mediums that I do sometimes have to remember.
We sometimes forget.
Yeah. In a studio with an established and respectable radio station, you don't use bad language.
No.
However, if we're doing it on our organisations and to some extent with Audio Boom, a little fruity language sometimes emphasises a point.
Does not go amiss.
But we're not manic.
Saul says this: do you believe in reincarnation? If so, what or who would you like to come back as?
Well, it's interesting. I was reading only this week about the death of George Harrison.
Yeah.
Because it's one particular anniversary of his death, you know what I mean? Sadly.
Yes.
I think he died in about 2003, 2004,
something like that.
So it might have been 15 years or something like that, you know. So, I remember at the time distinctly Sunday newspapers carrying stories saying George Harrison, desperately ill and all this. And then the following week, yesterday saying, there's nothing wrong with George Harrison, you know what I mean? He's fine and all that kind of stuff. However, George Harrison was such a spiritual person. In the end, after he did die, a friend of his came out and said, no, he's very calm at the end. He said, you've got to understand, George is a very spiritual man.
Mm.
And actually, George was quite looking forward to dying because he wanted to know what came next.
Yeah.
He wanted to know.
He was curious.
Yeah, curious where the journey goes from here. He was a very big supporter, of Hare Krishna, as you know.
Yeah.
And
Also by then become a massive supporter. I mean, he single-handedly rescued, I would say, and supported the English film business through Handmade Films, company.
And
if it wasn't for him, The Life of Brian would never have got made.
No, that's right.
And loads of other movies would not have been made.
Didn't he get involved in the Madonna one that was Shanghai Surprise
or something like that?
I think he did.
But British films were on their ass.
Yes.
And he alone was the one that rescued
them. Yes, he was. And also, he, this thing he had. What killed George Harrison, most people think, is he had this fan, it still has, his family still have this fantastic mansion just outside Henley-on-Thames in Oxfordshire. It's called Something Park. I can't remember now. But it is so big that the cover of his triple LP, All Things Must Pass, which became a single number one and an album number one at the same time, Christmas, whatever year it was, all released in this country in America.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous success. A picture of him sitting on the front of it, sitting on a spade in his grounds.
Yes.
He had about,
That movie, 50 which acres. Is made by Martin Scorsese.
Yes, that's right.
Which I think is called...
Dark Horse?
Living in the Material
Living
World,
Living in the Material
I think,
World, yeah. Yeah.
Is filmed... pretty much with the interviews taking place largely at that manor.
That's right.
Manor house,
And not only that, he had an underground catacomb of caves where he used to take his guests on boats and they used to go sailing around these underground lakes.
Yeah.
It was an amazing place.
Yeah.
However, for some bizarre reason, some nutter stalker broke into the grounds of the house one night, right? He just broke a bit of fencing down and climbed in. George had a huge window next to his door, the size of a double door, really.
Yeah.
And this guy managed to lift a huge stone monument that was out there and chucked it through the window. It shattered the window.
Did it not turn out he was high on angel dust?
He was high on something, I know.
And that was something that poor old George Harrison never recovered from.
He never recovered from it, because you're absolutely right. Because, in such a huge building, I never know how anybody ever finds where the Queen's bedroom is when they break into Buckingham Palace.
I'm sure you've been in big houses, as I have, and particularly places that have got more than one set of staircases.
That's right.
And I never know where anything is.
No, I don't either. Do you know the 700 rooms?
I was completely lost.
700 rooms at Buckingham Palace.
How did
Michael Stone, the guy who broke in, how did he ever find a bedroom?
I know what I mean?
Unbelievable. But
Incredible.
Anyway, on this night, what happened was, because they heard such a tremendous crashing noise, George Harrison leapt out of bed and ran down the corridor to where they crashed. So that's how the invader found him.
Yeah.
But he then attacked him and stabbed him.
Yeah.
And it is said George never recovered from that. And in fact, his illness, which was cancer, started quite shortly after that attack. So that is another terrible episode echoing the death of John Lennon, really.
But it also shows you how many nutters there are out there.
Oh, of course it does,
And I know you're going to say, well, that means there's only two. But no,
there's loads.
There's lots of them who would like to get close enough to you to do you harm.
I don't know how Paul McCartney, you know, feels about life today. I was amazed to see that a few weeks ago there was a picture of him on a tube on a train.
On a train going back to Hastings.
Going home to Hastings, that's right. And I thought, my God, you're a brave man. Maybe you just leave it in the hands of fate now, because there's nothing you can do, you know.
Exactly.
But you wouldn't find top businessmen, particularly Russian businessmen, walking around this country without their bodyguards.
Exactly. KB says, which is the best Lord? Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Dance, or Lord of the Flies?
Lord of the Flies is a book I studied at school. I found it very upsetting.
You studied it?
Yeah, I studied it.
You didn't just read it?
I studied it for O-level.
Right.
And, the idea that teenage kids, or pubescent kids, really, could resort to savagery when they were all plunked together on one island and, you know, started killing each other and all that kind of stuff was horrifying. Yeah,
it was horrifying.
Book, it really shook me.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings, I've never understood. I swear, I have never understood the how many films were there? Three?
I think there might have been more than that, but I mean, they go on and on and on forever.
They go on.
I mean,
on
I've only ever watched them while with one eye open, because every time I put any Lord of the Rings movie on, which my kids occasionally like to watch, I've taken them to the cinema as well.
Yeah.
I can't stay awake.
I literally
can't stay awake.
I can't get the plot. I don't even know what the ring is. And then The Hobbit was
ring is an actual ring.
Yeah, I know.
But it has magic powers.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, Lord of the Rings, why is it plural? Is there more than one ring?
I think there are.
Is there?
I think that's the point. Okay, I think there are several rings.
And then The Hobbit was like a precursor, wasn't it, to Lord of the Rings?
The Hobbit was indeed,
written by Tolkien, was it?
J.R.R. Tolkien.
A lot of people call me The Hobbit because they think.
The most recent picture we put out of you on Ask Porky was that one.
Yes.
A lot of people have made comments about that.
I like that picture. And can I say to you, that is going to be my official picture from now on.
Is it?
I think that's a very flattering picture
of me. People say you look as if you've either put your finger into an electric socket, you look like Catweasel.
Yeah.
They're not very complimentary.
Or the guy from Back to the Future. Doc. You know.
Doc, By the way, did you see that picture of him recently? There was a picture of all the Back to the Future people reuniting.
Right.
And it was Doc. It was Michael J. Fox.
Okay.
It was the woman,
I thought he
Leah.
Was dead, Michael J. Fox.
No, he's not dead.
Isn't he dying?
No, he's got he's dying. Parkinson's disease.
Oh, okay.
He's not dead.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm glad about that. Yeah.
No, they didn't want to kill him off too early before his time.
No.
Somebody else who was... Biff, I think, the guy that played Biff, you know, the bad guy.
Yeah.
The scumbag.
Yes.
And then the woman who plays Michael J. Fox's mother.
Right.
Leah Thompson, I think her name
is. Leah, was it? Yeah.
But old Doc looks absolutely ancient.
Really?
He looks about 120.
Well, he is about 120, I think. So that's probably why.
Mm.
So we get to the third one, which is Lord of the Rings, okay? And I have to say, I so admire Michael Flatley.
Yes.
That's a guy, isn't it?
Lord of the Dance.
Yeah, and when I first saw that video, and it was on a tape in the days when I got it, I went and bought it in a shop for somebody for Christmas, and then at Christmas we were sitting there, and the minute you saw him burst onto the stage and start Irish dancing with his arms straight down his side of his body.
Diddly diddly dancing.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
The girls that do it are very sexy.
Well, I have to say, the opening scene in the one I've got, and there's lots more have been made since
there's
then.
There's only so much of it you can watch, though.
Yeah, but I do love it. And you're absolutely right about the girls, because they are... You know, they have to put copper on the stage
to make the tap dancing sound. Yeah.
And these girls, they start it by clicking their feet and moving forward slowly. And then they start dancing. Beautiful short skirts, dark tights, beautiful girls.
You don't have to go into too much detail.
No, arms straight down their body and so energetic and all that. And I have to say, my thoughts were, I wonder how much rumpy pumpy goes on behind the scenes at this
sort
of thing.
Well, I think the answer to that is pretty obvious, because Michael Flatley broke up with his wife.
Yes.
And took up with one of the dancers.
Well, he took up with several of the dancers, apparently, allegedly.
Yeah.
But he did say...
No, but he actually left his wife for one of the dancers.
Yeah, I think he did, yeah. But he said years later, he said, well, you know, if you looked at how beautiful those girls were and how many blokes were in the, you know, in the production as well, he said, and hardly any of them were homosexual. Yeah. He said, they were all, you know, great dancers. He said there was an awful lot of sexual energy floating about.
I'm sure there was.
When you're working that closely.
I'm
and
sure there
and
was.
He said a lot of it went on. So the answer to that question was three
Lords.
Lord of the Dance, without a shadow. I loved it. I loved the whole show. I mean, when you put on video, you can whiz through the bits you don't like the Spanish flamenco dancers.
Oh, yeah.
All I wanted to see was Michael Flatley jigging up and downstairs tap dancing and all these beautiful girls, including the lead actress woman, Butler. Was her name Butler?
Butler?
Wasn't it Butler?
I hate you, Butler.
Was it Jean Butler?
I don't know.
I think it was Jean Butler.
No idea.
Now, she was an American.
Yeah.
Flatley was sort of an Irish-American.
Yeah.
She hated Flatley because she said he tried to steal the scenes all the time.
Okay.
And she only did it for like one tour.
Like the leading lady.
She was a leading lady, yeah, yeah. Jean Butler, I think her name was. She only did it for one tour, and then she said, I can't stand working with Flatley anymore. What happened then was, right, they pushed Flatley out of the production because they said, well, you know.
I thought he owned all the rights to it.
Well, no, I'm about to tell you. They tried to push him out of production. He then sued them for the copyright to the choreography, which he said he created, and he won.
Right.
And he went off and then set up his own company called Lord of the Flames or something.
Lord of the
Feet
Flames?
Of Flames. No, Feet of Flames, Lord of the Dance.
Right.
That's right. He went and made himself Lord of the Dance, Feet of Flames.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Worth an awful lot of money. And everywhere now that it is performed, he gets money for it.
That's right.
Nearly finished. We have two more.
Okay.
Adrian is asking me a question. Please can you ask Porky about his locked room? The Two Mics Army are salivating at the possible revelations.
Mm. Doesn't exist.
Right.
Never has done.
There you go.
Straightforward answer.
That's it. The best one you can do. Now, let me see if I can find out one. Here's a quick one while I'm thinking. Here we go.
Yeah.
Brad says, I've recently broken my femur and can't work. Have you any recommendations to help save me from boredom?
Well, there's lots of things you can do to save yourself from boredom. First of all, start reading journals. Second of all, get yourself a decent iPad, right, or a computer or something like that.
Yeah.
Thirdly, watch a lot of stuff on television. There's a lot of stuff on television worth watching, which can improve your knowledge. I'm talking about the geographical channel and historical channels and all that kind of stuff. Right. Okay, you will learn a lot.
And all you've got to do is listen to the Porky Vision, of course.
Listen to Porky Vision. But the other thing is, with the sort of shopping facilities we have in this country these days, a bloke from Tesco or Ocado can turn up with all your provisions, make sure that in one of those plastic trays, there's half a dozen bottles of Pinot.
Indeed.
And you'll soon pass the time.
Okay. Here's one from FPL. Mm. Final question. If offered a £1,000 fight purse for a charity of your choice, would you step into the ring with Duncan Ferguson?
No.
I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't step into a ring with Duncan Ferguson for £100,000, okay? I don't need to get my block knocked off for a sum of money, really, and I wouldn't. Of course, I was the Butlins boxing champ from Pathelli in about 1963, and I was also the King's School Chester heavyweight boxing champion. I beat Martin Hazel, who was 5 inches taller than me, knocked him out the ring because he'd been abusive to me. I thought, fuck you, pal, and I gave it him.
That was Ask Porky with the Two Mics.
The kid had something like scarlet fever.
So they thought he was a healer.
Absolutely, they thought he was a healer. So, but then, of course, the Tsar...
He spent most of his time shagging.
He did, Then, of course, the Tsar thought, oh, he's a holy man.
Yeah.
I can leave him in the palace with the queen without a problem.
Yeah.
Rasputin then started, you know, frombying the queen, you know, in many different sort of ways. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Wasn't she put off by his hideous kind of hygiene?
Not really. Really? Not really. No, it didn't seem to worry her. You know, and she... Apparently she liked it, you know, back, front and centre. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff.
How do you know that?
Well, I've read a book about it. Have you? One of my journals.
Roger and, Secrets of the Russians.
Secrets of the Russians. And of course, you know, this had to come to an end.
Yeah.
So the Tsar ordered his death, you know. Mm. But to kill him, they tried to drown him.
Right.
But he climbed out of the River Moscow, where they tried to.
Well, they could have drowned him very well.
No, he climbed out.
Yeah.
So then they decided to poison him. Mm. So on another occasion, they put poison in his food, okay? He ate all the poison, he didn't die.
Right.
So then they thought, this really is a...
So he really has got some special powers.
Special powers and all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So then they shot him.
Right.
You know, they got him down a blind alley somewhere in St. Petersburg, back to St. Petersburg. Shot him, but he just kept walking.
Yeah.
So then two of them leapt on him with knives and stabbed him like 60 times.
So what, did he have 9 lives or something, Rasputin?
Well, I don't know, but he got up and walked away from that as well. Really? And then he only got 100 yards, he collapsed and he died.
Are you sure this wasn't some kind of myth?
No.
To make him out to be more important than he actually was.
No, it's absolutely true, believe me. Absolutely true. He'd been abusive to me. I thought, fuck you, pal, and I gave it him.